Hey, podcast listeners, this is your humble host, Michael Smalley, and I just wanted to take a moment of your time before the show gets going to remind you about our online membership. It is an incredible resource to help you build a better relationship, where we have taken all of our best video series and converted them into online courses. You can check out how to become a member at SmalleyInstitute.com. Well, today we have a very special guest who doesn't even realize just how big he is in the world of marriage. But we're going to be talking about sex because, frankly, that's the shows that you guys listen to the most. So I'm giving you more of what you want. But possibly one of the greatest gifts outside of eternal life that God ever gave humankind is the gift of sex. And to help us with this conversation today, we have on the line Dave Willis of StrongerMarriages.com, and he's going to help lend his expertise. And trust me, this guy has millions of readers, almost a million likes just on one of his Facebook pages, and there's a lot more. So coming up next, we talk about four things every couple needs to know about sex with the sex master, Dave Willis. I am your host, Michael Smalley, along with my co-host,
Seth Johnson.
And I've got Dave Willis. Have you ever been introduced in such a manner, Dave?
No, but as you were introducing me, like, my mind, I was already going to the new business cards that I'm about to get printed. That's the best title that I've ever been assigned, like, Sex Master. And my wife will just roll her eyes every time that I do it.
That one goes in bold right under your name. Willis, Sex Master.
Right now, I'm Googling what that is as a Chinese symbol, and I'm going to get it tattooed on my body. So
perfect. I mean, just
this is a life-changing interview already for me. Like, a lot's going to change.
I really just get that, just like the lower center part of your back. I think that'd be fantastic.
Right.
It's a real classy place.
And I just want to clarify for everyone listening that Dave Willis is also a pastor at Stevens Creek Church, and I am also a pastor, and Seth is a worship leader.
Yeah, so just a couple of holy guys talking about sex.
Hey, well, God created it, so I think that he's very much in favor of these kind of conversations.
I agree. Have you ever, like, what's the goofiest conversation with a church member you've ever had about sex?
Well, I would say there was one time I was at this like mini conference that was for pastors, and this couple got up and they were teaching about sex, but they refused to use the word sex.
No.
And so like the entire talk was in code, and they would use that. She would say comfort.
No.
And I'm thinking, what are we referring to right now? I don't know if she's talking about a back rub or if
bedding,
she's talking about
a new comforter,
you know, some kind of kinky position. I'm not sure what. We just went from comfort to encouragement. And then there's something called intimacy, which just I'm not even sure what that is. The way that she's
right,
but it was so awkward because it was like we weren't allowed to even say what we were talking about. So my wife and I laughed about that forever, and just kind of how quirky sometimes Christians can be to take this beautiful, awesome gift that God gave us and that he created. And then it's like, be so nervous and awkward talking about it that we never actually talk about it.
And why do you think that is? Like, why are, cause I would agree. And actually, Dave, one of the things I really appreciate about, your writing and your blog and the things that you're doing is you're very honest and frank about those, especially those kinds of subjects. So what do you think the hang up? Why do Christians tend to be so stinking prude about discussing sexual matters?
I think that somewhere along the way, we started buying into this lie that Satan owns sex now. And we forget that, like, he never created anything, that God's the only creator, and all that Satan has ever done is perverted things that have already been created. And so he tries to create a counterfeit. And that's something he's done with sex, you know, and we see that through pornography and through just kind of the way our culture celebrates a lot of unhealthy sexual behavior. And it's the church, instead of raising up the value and the beauty of God's master design for sex and how awesome and glorious it is and how it just how powerful it is in that beautiful context of marriage, we've kind of taken a step back and just said, no, that's messy and it's complicated. And every time it's brought up, you know, it always leads people down, you know, down the wrong path. And essentially the church has been just so quiet about it that we've let the culture and everybody else believe that this does belong to the world, and Christians need to just be these kind of quiet prudes on the subject. But I passionately believe that it's something God created, and it's something we need to reclaim for His glory, and that Christians having sex within marriage the way God intended should have the best sex life of anybody on the planet. And so that's why I try to speak to it just very bluntly. Yeah. And a lot of it's just because there are so few people within the church that are doing that.
Yeah, I think like we definitely wholeheartedly agree with that. And I'd even say part of the issue of having conversations is that, you know, there's definitely a time and place for everything. And I think that oftentimes it's hard for people, especially inside the church, to realize like that is a time and place to discuss it, right? Because they wouldn't necessarily have this conversation, you know, with a certain audience, right? But at these, you know, retreats and at these studies, they're for adults. That's the completely appropriate time. So there's not a need to speak in code. There's not a need to be bashful about it. And like you said, because it is something that God has created and ordained, like, yeah, we speak bluntly and boldly about it. Because this is the time. This is the time we need to press into what God has taught about it.
No, I think that's exactly right. And Seth, I lost you there for a second because there's a little window in my office. The door's closed, but there's this little window, and one of my like office mates who's right next door and is hearing this whole conversation just like walked up to the window and held up a piece of paper that said #sexmaster.
Oh, I like him. Give him a raise.
He just stood there. And so I was so into what you were saying, and then I looked over, and there's this guy standing on my window holding the sign.
Hey, with the millions of people that are reading your stuff, we could get that trending. Dave Willis, sex master.
That might even open you up to a whole different audience.
Yeah, it's true.
That's going to be the name of the autobiography someday.
Yeah. The official autobiography. All I ask for is 5%. That's all I'm asking. Feels fair. Well, you know what's funny? When I would do sermons on sexual intimacy, because I felt it was important, I'd actually have my staff create, you know, these really cool movie-like looking posters that would tell everyone, hey, this is PG-13. So if you don't want your kid to hear an honest conversation about sex, then don't let him come into this sermon today.
Yeah, it's good.
No, it's true. I mean, we need to be we've got to be able to have those conversations at church, because if we don't, then where are people ever going to learn? You know, where are they going to learn the truth about it?
Well, and you know, in the light of being open and authentic and awesome, I said, what are some of the favorite sexual things you do with your wife?
You know,
he was about to answer.
Sounded like you were about to answer. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was, and then I realized, like, oh wow, yeah. We're actually recording this. And
I think if you said anything, Dave, you'd probably never have sex again.
Right. Yeah. So I think, yeah, just for the in the spirit of discretion, you know, we'll just say that it's all awesome.
So, well, and I will continue kind of on this personal level, but not, you know, inappropriately personal. But what is, what has it been like for you? Like, did you always dream that you would be kind of in this big marriage ministry world? Like, how did you come about? I'm just curious a little bit about your story on how you landed and have built this incredibly successful and very healthy. Man, I tried to find things about you that I could complain or maybe shame or belittle you about, but you know, the advice that I came across, all of the stuff you're doing is really good. So how in the world did you end up here?
You know, it's a great question. Like, I didn't plan this. Like, I didn't plan it. I didn't sit out and think, oh, I'm going to do marriage ministry. It was kind of one of these things where little by little, God kept kind of giving me a burden for it, a passion for it, and then opening up doors of opportunity for it. And just through our own marriage and just through doing ministry in the church, like, I would have conversations with people all the time. And it seemed like every prayer request, every counseling session, it just all came back to marriage. It was either directly or indirectly the result of some kind of issue in marriage. And I just started feeling like, man, there's so much brokenness in this, and somebody should do something about it. And I just kind of felt like God tapping me on the shoulder saying, well, you're somebody. And I felt totally unqualified, and I didn't really know where to start. So I really just started the one place where I could start for free, because that was my budget, was free. And I created a Facebook page, and that the whole point of the page was just to encourage people in their marriage to be a small part of the solution. And little by little that grew. And then out of that one page, it kind of created and launched some other opportunities. And more my wife and I have just really sensed that, you know, this is kind of what God was preparing us for all along. Now, looking backward, you know, the things we were doing that we didn't even realize were preparing us for this was actually really great planning for this. But yeah, it was not the like life plan when I was 12 years old or anything. But God knew what he was doing.
Is there anybody in the marriage industry that sort of you've looked up to or that you've leaned on or that's been an inspiration for you?
Well, definitely the entire Smalley family.
Ah, I set that up for you. If you hadn't gone there, Dave, you're going to get crushed.
Softball. You threw me a softball. Like, I actually, you know, lobbied for a while to see if your dad would adopt me early on and I could become a Smalley.
He would have been open to it. He's been very disappointed with his two sons.
He never returned those emails. No. But no, I really have, admired, your whole family's work. And I've tried to like read and learn as much as I can over the last decade, especially, of just what people who are in this space, who have this calling, you know, who've been at it for a long time and done it with excellence and integrity, and just tried to learn as much as I can. Like, hardly anything that I say is really an original thought. I'm trying to learn as much as I can, kind of from people who have been at it a lot longer than me. Whenever my wife and I, meet a couple and they've been married for 50 or 60 years, we'll always just start asking them questions like, what's your advice? What's your secret? How did you, get through the hard times? What were some of the best times? And then we just take what we're learning and try to package it in a way that it works on the internet or in a blog form or in a short video. And we're just sharing what we're learning. And it's the same stuff that's helping us. So like, selfishly, one of the big reasons that we do this is it's been the most helpful thing for our marriage that we've ever done, is to do marriage ministry. And so it's helping us while it's hopefully helping other people too.
Well, I'm curious, do you ever feel, and I mean this, so I'm not being goofy, but do you ever feel inadequate? Do you ever feel like, guy, I'm just, sharing other people's stuff? And it's not like I'm not leading down an attack road. That's not my style.
Right.
But for some reason, I was curious if you ever feel that way, or if you ever feel like, good Lord, what am I doing?
Well, I think that I feel like if we're ever in a place where we think we can do everything we're doing totally on our own strength and in our own ability, then we're thinking way too small and we're probably living outside of our calling. Because I feel like Jesus always calls people to something that's beyond their ability and outside their comfort zone, so that we have to lean on him to do it. And this has kind of been one of those things for me. It's like, it's been a great adventure, and it's been, way outside of my own natural skills and comfort zone. But it's also been the very thing that has like grown me in my own faith the most, because it's like, when we're in a place where we've got to lean on God and we've got to operate in a power that's bigger than ourselves, like, that's when our faith gets real. And I think every Christian, whether you're in full-time ministry or not, we've all got to have those places in our life where we're willing to step out and say, all right, Lord, use me. Cause I think he's much more interested in a willing heart than a perfect resume. And he tends to, he tends to just, you know, use all of us when we say, all right, Lord, this, you know, all of me, you got it. It's yours. Where do you want to go today? What do you want to do today? And the more we say yes to him, the more, you know, he continues to give us opportunities to say yes to him. And so that's kind of been, you know, the story for me in the marriage ministry. But I think that every single one of us is called to have a similar story in some kind of part of our life.
You know, that just first of all, let me compliment you. You had multiple Pinterest-worthy quotes in that answer.
Thank you.
That was incredible. And the other part, I even asked because honestly, to hopefully be an encouragement to you, you sound very similar to my father. So he, you know, he had his MDiv. He was a youth pastor. When he entered into the marriage ministry, man, he was just a lowly assistant pastor at a small church in Waco, Texas.
Wow.
And so his journey to becoming this kind of marriage expert was really just the fact that his own marriage was suffering. And so he realized, I don't know how to be a husband. I don't know how to have a healthy marriage. I don't know how to be a healthy father. So he read anything and everything and interviewed anyone or, you know, anybody that he possibly could, and obviously became an expert. And to encourage you, Dick, because, you know, obviously if you grow up in Gary Smalley's home, I don't get to necessarily take that same path, right? Because people will look at me and be like, punk. You know, so I kind of got forced into going the education route and getting my PhD. But what I appreciate about what your ministry is doing, because I'll tell you, I can be pretty judgmental about just what people are teaching or what
yes, you can.
Yeah. Well, especially in the marriage arena, because I feel like I've, you know, 23 years experience, have the education, the legacy, the lineage, whatever. And man, the stuff that you're doing is spot on. And I'm sure you're aware of there's a book in the Bible called Ecclesiastes.
I've heard of it.
I don't know if you're aware of that same book, Dave.
Is that in the Apocrypha?
No. That's a book of magic from the middle Middle Ages. I almost said Middle Eastern. No, I was like, that's
Middle,
not right.
Middle Earth from the Hobbits.
I love Ecclesiastes, but it's one of those books where it's like, you know, Solomon obviously is so wise, but I feel like I'm just reading a dude's midlife crisis when I read that.
I know. It's totally true. But the truth, and what I love, it's one of my favorite. And what I love, though, is he says, man, there is nothing new under the sun. So, you know, I know that sometimes we can feel like, God, are we just stealing? We're not stealing. We're just saying things potentially in a better way. That's really what my father did, is he was able to disseminate really technical research or books or things that really couldn't translate to a wider audience. And he was able to make them simple. And it feels like you're doing very much the same thing. So, man, there isn't a new thought. Even if I'm to do a research study or whatever, it's been done before. It's been thought before. You know, there's kind of a few core principles that are all in Scripture. You know, they've been around since the beginning of time.
It freed me up when I realized I didn't have to be original. I just had to be faithful. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
you know, and that kind of freed me up. Cause I think there's all this pressure in our world to like leave our original mark and, you know, and all of that. And usually like pride and insecurity tend to drive that, which is something all of us struggle with. I know I do. But when we free ourselves up from that and just say, you know, that's not really God's metric for success. It's like, really, it's just, am I being faithful to this thing that he's called me to be an encourager, to, mm-hmm. you know, point people to the truth that I didn't invent, you know, that you know, all truth kind of, you know, God has the copyright on, and just, you know, point people back to that. And then it's liberating. And so.
It is. It is very liberating, and you're doing a great job. I don't mean to fawn all over you, so now I'm going to get more critical because Seth is giving me the signals, the hand signals, like, dude, we got to get to the actual point of this podcast eventually. So as much as I'd love to keep going down the road that we're on, you know, you had a podcast post, 4 things every couple needs to know about sex. And it was really good, and especially the fourth, let me see here. No, it was actually the first one. And the first one, and I pre-warned you, so hopefully you have your own article up there so that you don't sound like you have no idea what you wrote.
Right.
But the first one is most men see sex as a form of stress relief While most women need stress relief before they can be in the mindset to make love.
Now, this is maybe the biggest cause of kind of miscommunication and frustration around the issue of sex and marriage. It's just that men and women are wired totally opposite in this way, which is proof that God has a sense of humor, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's just a funny scenario. But if you don't understand this going in, it's going to create a lot of friction.
Yes, it does. And now here's my one, like, because I actually agree very much with it, so I don't have a problem. But here's where I get a little nervous about number one, and I was curious. I'm curious about what you think. Is that I think many times men sexually get put in this box. Like you hear women all the time. All he ever wants is sex. All he ever thinks about is sex. But what I've learned over the years is that, you know, you can watch little boys and girls even when they're like in kindergarten. And if you go into a kindergarten playground, you see all the little girls grouped up talking, because that's usually how they experience intimacy.
Right.
But then you see all the little boys wrestling. They're wrestling and pushing and fighting, and it's physical. And so men really tend to meet their deep emotional needs physically, where women tend to meet their deep emotional needs verbally or vocally. How do you feel about that? Like, in the sense of, you know, because I get it, sex can definitely be a stress release, and men, because of how we compartmentalize our lives, we don't necessarily have to have all the cogs in a row in order to be interested in sex.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't want to belittle men that, you know, all it is a stress relief.
Sure. Oh, yeah. No, it's obviously much deeper than that. And it God wired us up so brilliantly, uniquely. And yeah, when we're in that beautiful sacred act of making love, it's meeting a whole bunch of different kinds of needs, you know, at the same time. But understanding just how men and women are so differently wired in this, like you just talked about kind of the verbal connecting and how women tend to just naturally kind of connect and meet this need for emotional intimacy through conversation. I mean, that's a big deal. And I tell people, you know, guys, think about it like this. Your wife's need for communication is every bit as strong a drive as your need for sex. And if you'll look at it that way, then it'll make you so much more available to connecting with her in that way. Because I think a lot of times for us guys, you know, we look at communication just as something on the to-do list. It's like, well, let's talk about whatever we need to talk about. Let's get through it so we can get done with this talking, which is just wasting my time.
Which sometimes women do that with men about sex. Oh,
exactly. You
know, this is a check mark. I'll just get through it and then get on with my life.
Exactly. But and so if both spouses will look at it as it's like, okay, this is meeting a need for me, but is also meeting a need for you know, for my spouse in a really unique way, then I think that we can see it as this beautiful and sacred act of serving each other while also growing close to each other. So like for the conversation, if a guy will look at conversation, not just as, okay, this is something I have to get through so we can get to the sex. Like this is just, this is like the salad before my steak comes. It's like, I'm not really interested in salad. Let's just get through this. Why did you even bring it? But it's like, no, this is such an important part of this whole process. And when I'm engaged with my wife, connecting, opening up in conversation, when she's asking me questions, it's not to interrogate me, it's to connect with every part of my world, and that she feels most secure and most connected to me when I'm willing to listen without always trying to just immediately solve whatever it is she's talking about, or when I'm willing to open up about the things at work that I normally compartmentalize and just try to keep out of the house because she wants to connect with every part of my world, then it's helping her on this emotional level feel just as connected to me as I'm just trying to feel with her physically right now. And so it's all connected. You know, we guys, like you said, tend to compartmentalize and sex can just be in its own little box all by itself. And it's a box we like to go to often, but with it's women,
box.
Yeah, it is. It's a good one. But for women, especially it's all interconnected. And so if we just try to rush there without all of these other aspects, then for them, it's going to feel cold. It's not going to be a place where they're really feeling connected to us. They're just kind of doing this chore to check off their list. and we miss out on an opportunity to really connect on all levels.
So do you have maybe some practical like starting places for both men and women on how to meet that need of their spouse?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, for you guys that are out there, and it's not always the guy that wants more frequency. Yeah. It usually is, but not always. But, you know, talking specifically to you men that desire more frequency, I'd encourage you to just think of foreplay as being not like a 5 minutes beforehand event, but like an all day event. Like with every text message you send throughout the day, with every conversation, with every little chore you do, like, you know, I always joke, you know, you guys are never hotter to your wife than when she sees you doing the dishes or folding laundry. You know, we call that chore play. You know, you
that's good.
You doing
that's
that good. And it's all good. And so doing those things, you're taking things off of her list to help her de-stress, to help get her into that mindset. And just to realize that she wants to connect with you on all levels. And so just being available to her, being thoughtful towards her in all parts of your life, I think that that's going to lead to, you know, greater intimacy and greater frequency, you know, in the bedroom. And for you ladies, you know, just to understand, I think it's hard. The more women I talk to, it's hard for a woman to wrap her mind around just the drive that most men feel, the need that most men have in this one particular area. And when that need is not being met, it creates a lot of frustration in him, both physically and emotionally. It creates sometimes even resentment, and it can just create this cycle of negativity where what happens when one person feels like their main need is not being met is that they don't feel like they have the will or the capacity, and definitely don't have the desire to meet the needs for that other person. And so if both spouses will be willing to say, I want to do whatever I can to meet his needs, to meet her needs, even when I feel like my own needs aren't being met, somebody has to be willing to go first. Someone has to be willing to say, I'm going to give my best, even when I feel like it's not being reciprocated. Right. And that can make all the difference.
And, you know, what I love, Dave, is the truth is that both men and women need to be able to recognize and acknowledge, you know, men need to acknowledge that their wife wants to love them and wants to be loved, and her way of connecting might be verbally or emotionally in that way. And then wives need to learn and recognize that the husband, it's not just about the orgasm. It's not just about the act of sex. It's a legitimate way that their husband is trying to do the very same thing that they desire. Mm-hmm. We just, again, we do it so differently. And I've found a lot of success with couples, especially in our, you know, Smalley marriage intensive program, helping them start to reframe how they view each other. So if we view each other like, oh my gosh, she's so high maintenance, as opposed to she's really just wanting to connect with me and love me well, and oh my gosh, all he ever wants is sex. Actually, what he's really wanting is to be connected and to love me well, and that we do it differently, and that's okay. You know, my dad had a great word picture that when it comes to sex, because you talked about foreplay and making an all-day foreplay kind of experience for your wife. The image that he would use is when it comes to being turned on sexually, men are like microwaves and women are like crockpots.
Yeah, that's good.
And so we need to honor that and know that I can't just roll over in the morning and be like, all right, babe, let's get it on. I got to like wake up, brush my teeth and say, hey, would you be excited about later? Maybe, possibly. And let that crockpot get turned on. And by the end of the day, they're heated. They're ready to go.
That's a good word right there. I'm thinking about how to get that crock pot turned on.
I know. Just send her a nice text right now. We'll pause. We'll take a brief podcast pause. All right. So number two, we have deeper transparency outside the bedroom leads to deeper intimacy inside the bedroom. So what do you mean by that? About that transparency?
Oh, man, that's good. Like, I'm just... And whoever wrote that was smart.
I was like, yeah, I think you wrote that.
Wait a second.
I probably stole it from somewhere. Well, we describe it as in, we call it a naked marriage. And where that comes from is Genesis, when you look at the very first picture God gave us of marriage, Adam and Eve were naked and they had no shame. And this is before sin, before anything else that entered the picture. This is like God's beautiful design for marriage. And he intentionally told us that he made them naked. And that was not only a picture of this physical nakedness, but I believe he painted that picture for us to show us that we're called to be emotionally naked, naked in every way. Nakedness represents total transparency. It means vulnerability. It says, I've got nothing to hide from you. And if you want to have total intimacy in your marriage, you've got to have that level of transparency. You can't have secrets. I think that secrecy is one of the biggest intimacy killers in marriage. And so if you're not being totally honest with your spouse about everything, if you're not giving that person an all-access pass to your mind, your heart, your bank account, your time, your schedule, your phone, your computer, everything you've got, and you're building up walls, that's going to translate into all areas of your marriage, including the bedroom. And those walls are going to be something that you can feel. It's just blocking you from really connecting in every way. And so we encourage couples, you know, one of the best things you can do, not only for your sex life, but for every part of your marriage, is to take the secret-free guarantee, to just say, I'm not going to have any secrets from you. I want to give you an honest answer to every question you ask, and there's no question that's off limits. And you know, we're going to get naked, not only physically, but we're going to start by doing it emotionally, mentally, in all parts of our relationship. And that transparency will always create deeper intimacy.
Well, and you know what I usually encourage couples, because I agree. I mean, not having secrets is you know, you're building, you're sectioning off your ability to be truly intimate or close with each other. However, I also like to encourage people that if you want your spouse to be totally open and honest with you, then it's also my responsibility for Amy, for example, it's my responsibility to create a safe environment where she can be honest. So if Amy tries to be honest and then I blast her for it, or I shame her or criticize her for it, or even, you know, one of the consistent, very unhealthy coping mechanisms people use with honesty is that they self-deprecate, right? They over-dramatize, and now it's like, I'm the worst person ever. Like, you know, when a spouse is trying to go, hey, listen, and especially when you talk about sexual intimacy, you know, if you approach your spouse and you're like, hey, and you want to do it in a positive way, but if you're trying to correct something sexually, like maybe something's going on in the bedroom that you really don't enjoy, right? And if I'm, you know, if my spouse is vulnerable enough to share that with me, then I need to be safe in return. I need to be able to handle that information, right? Not take it personally, but then also be positive back so that I create an environment where we can actually be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know what you think about that.
No, it's so true. And vulnerability, like you said, I mean, that's really the key there. It's like putting yourself out there, in a way that might be scary sometimes, to say, like, you know, I feel naked right now, not just physically, but I'm feeling totally exposed right now just to share this. And it has to be a safe place, because every time that you're courageous enough to be vulnerable with your spouse in that way, to say something or to ask something or to confess something that might take some courage just to say out loud, your spouse has an opportunity to build so much trust and intimacy in the relationship by how they respond in that moment, by responding and letting you know that this is a safe place. You know, our relationship is always a safe place for us to be able to confess or ask or talk about anything at all. But both people have to be willing to, you know, to get there. Otherwise, you know, what happens in the bedroom, it is just, you know, purely a physical act and a physical release. And that's one part of it, obviously. But if that's all it is, then you're really missing out.
You really are. And I even think of, in today's world, with the issue of pornography and the addictions that causes, what breaks my heart is if a husband gets caught, or maybe even if he confesses on his own. And I've literally had to tell women to their faces, no, this is not divorce worthy. And no, it is not the same as having a physical affair. It's wrong. It's unhealthy. It can be very damaging. But, you know, these poor men, they try to open up. They try to be honest. And then what they get in return is a lot of condemnation and judgment and, frankly, threats. I mean, I literally had a young lady. They'd been married 3 or 4 years. She kicked him out of the home because he had watched Game of Thrones, which I wouldn't watch personally. I don't think it's healthy. It's kind of that soft, you know, that soft porn kind of crud. But to kick him out of the house and threaten divorce was insane.
Yeah.
And it's sad that people aren't able to be honest with each other and not fear, you know, an overreaction mm-hmm. or an overly devastating response.
No, I think you've got to be able to talk about these things. You have to be able to just talk about where that's coming from and, you know, what's out of bounds and all that. But to feel like you could be kicked out of your house because, you know, you watched the wrong show. And yeah, I'm just trying to process all that. But
well,
I think
it's sort of like legalism, right? And I think sometimes that's where the church gets in trouble is we become very pharisaical. We kind of become like Pharisees where you just have to look good. You don't have to be good. You just have to look good.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, and we're also taught these really devastating lies growing up about things. And I think Satan's involved. His whole job is to distort what's good.
Oh yeah. And he's got a lot of practice at it.
Yeah. Literally a lot of practice at it.
The thing about porn, I heard this quote that some pastor said, and it just really stuck with me. He said the problem with porn isn't that it shows us too much. It's that it shows us too little. And it really stuck with me because, you know, we tend to think of just kind of the graphic acts that we see, which of course in themselves are wrong to take that in. But really the most damaging part of porn is it reduces sex to something that's too little. Mm-hmm. It's just purely the, you know, this animal act, and it's not the sacred spiritual gift, this beautiful gift that God created. And it's rewired our minds to think that that's all sex is just the act itself. And
that's what society it tells us all the time. And that's what the secular society wants to reduce it to, because therefore we can have quote unquote more freedom.
Yeah. Hedonism. Mm-hmm. This is all about my pleasure, which we know scripture goes very opposite to that direction. Well, and actually this leads into number three here on our four things every couple needs to know about sex. Number three, you write, keep your fantasies focused on each other. Don't just be physically monogamous, but mentally monogamous too. So are you, you know, in that, are you kind of talking about there's not only just pornography potentially or whatever, but then also just daydreaming about others?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The most powerful sexual organ we have is the mind. It's where intimacy begins, and it's where all, you know, sexual sin begins as well. And if we let our mind just go to you know, replaying images that are, you know, outside of our marriage, then really, even if you're not physically watching pornography, you could have a porn reel going in your mind all the time, and it's just as damaging as having something pulled up on your computer screen. So, you know, we've got to keep our and again, this is something that takes kind of constantly saying, Lord, I need you to renew my mind. I need you to constantly bring my thoughts back to where they need to be. Because left on autopilot, all of our thoughts are going to go to the wrong places. So mm-hmm. this takes, again, not just our own willpower, but it's being intentional about keeping our eyes away from things that are going to put the wrong images in our head. But then it's also not just avoiding the negative, but it's actively seeking out, Lord, I want to put your word in my mind. I want to be connected to you in prayer. I want to be constantly connected to my spouse, so that they're the one place where any kind of, you know, romantic or sexual fantasy that I go to will only involve them. Because when that doesn't happen, then it starts to unravel, you know, that sacred connection we're called to have with our spouse.
It does. But what's cool, and this is why I love your fourth point, but what's cool in a biblically honoring or a God honoring marriage, and especially within the sexual relationship, we're not talking about that you can't be creative. You can't have these fantasies with each other, because number four is don't forget to have fun. And that's where I think a lot of couples miss out, especially within the Christian community, is they've sort of defined appropriate sex as the missionary position, lights out, under the comforter, and let's get this thing over. And what's sad is if you just read the Song of Solomon, you know, I mean, they don't even let in the Jewish culture, they don't even let young Jewish men read that book until they're ready for marriage. Cause it is It's spicy.
It is steamy.
It really is. When you learn the ancient sort of meaning behind a lot of the things that come across today, like, what do I care about a peach tree? Oh, you'll care a lot when you understand what that means.
Yeah. You're going to love the peach tree.
So what do you – let me ask you – I'm going to ask you a tough question. What – from a biblical or Christian perspective, what's allowed in the bedroom?
Yeah, that's a good question. Looks like we're out of time.
Yeah. It's a podcast, baby. We got to go on and on. Your coworker might want to get that hashtag sexmaster back up there on the window.
I think I have some Jeopardy music I can start playing.
Yeah. That's good. Well, that's a real good question. I think the question to start with is like, you know, what's allowed? You got to look what has God clearly said that's like, you know, kind of beyond just our interpretation, what's out of bounds. And some of the things that are clearly out of bounds would be bringing another person.
Yeah, third party.
Either physically or virtually. So again, that's not only bringing in, you know, somebody else and, you know, kind of having an open marriage, which is really no marriage at all, but also doing that virtually through pornography or through these other means is essentially the same effect. It doesn't have necessarily the same actual consequence or damage, but it's you're essentially playing with the same fire when you're bringing in anybody virtually. As well, I'd say, you know, anything that one, you know, one of the other people involved is they're just not comfortable with, like they feel like totally pressured. You know, if anything that you feel like you've got to like keep pressuring your spouse to do, is missing the point. I think you need to be able to share your desires and your fantasies and have a safe place to do that. But I think we also need to go in understanding that my spouse might not have the same level of comfort or desire to go to those certain places that I do.
Well, what places, Dave?
I don't know. I mean, I think that for some people they could really be into, like, you know, let's do like role playing, or
or we got this book called The Kama Sutra. Let's figure out these positions.
Yeah. And so you want to try these different, you know, different positions, and sometimes, you know, what one spouse might say, well, okay, these I'm comfortable with, these I'm not there yet, or maybe I need to take some yoga classes to get flexible enough to try number, you know, 43 there.
Number 43.
That's a good one.
Wow, Dave has gotten down to 43. That's impressive.
I'll stretch for that one.
I think it all comes down to realizing that, like, okay, this is a sacred act. It's supposed to be fun. Like you said, we don't have to be like just like rigid and uncreative in our thinking. Like this has to be like a fun place where there's laughter and there's creativity and there's spontaneity and there's adventure and there's variety and all of this stuff. But at the same time, balancing that with, you know, we want to make sure that both people always feel safe, that both people feel respected. And the husband and wife, you know, talking through that, just not because in all parts of your marriage, you have to have some of these same conversations.
Yeah, you do. But I do have to correct you significantly on one of the things you just mentioned. Under no circumstances do I want any laughing from my wife when we're involved in lovemaking.
Yeah, maybe that was that's more of like a foreplay thing.
Nope, maybe. Don't want it. Don't want any laughter.
Out there too. Maybe like the pre-foreplay, you know.
Well, one of the things that I often encourage couples, especially when it comes to sexual intimacy, is I virtually say the same thing. It's like, clearly no third parties. You know, one of the funniest responses in teaching this to larger audiences that I've ever had, because I'd always challenge the crowd to go, I dare you to come up with a different boundary that I'm talking about in Scripture. And this guy came up to me, and only one time in 20 years has this happened. He came up to me and goes, why don't you look up Leviticus 6? And I thought, Leviticus? I don't even realize Leviticus talked about sex. So I might be wrong on this, on the reference there. It's been a long time. But when I looked up the Scripture, I almost fell out of the chair laughing, because it was like, don't have sex with your mother. I'm like, done. Right. Totally agree. Don't have sex with your sister. Again, I'm great with that. Easy. Or donkeys. Donkeys made the list. I'm like, okay, why did God even have to talk about
people? this is really a problem. Like, how right. how lame was life during Leviticus?
I know, man. It was not healthy. So I got back up on stage after the break and was like, hey, someone challenged me. And let me just say, I fully agree with all of these other boundaries that the scripture is at. But ultimately, Dave, it sounds like what you're saying, and I might say a little different, is that what's allowable in the bedroom is what's honoring to each other. So if I'm more adventurous sexually and my wife is more conservative, then naturally, because I'm sex is yet just another way I can serve my wife. So naturally, I'm going to be a little more conservative than maybe I would have had I married an adventurous wife. And at the same time, though, I want the ladies to hear, or husbands, that maybe you're conservative, but you married a more adventurous person. So you probably need to be more adventurous than maybe what you were naturally born as. And that's okay, because that's how we honor each other in the bedroom as well.
Yeah, and these are conversations that need to be had and begin prior to even being in the moment as well, and in the throes of it, and just being like, yeah. Hey, this is something that is like be interesting to me. Would it be of interest to you as mm-hmm. well?
I've had those conversations with my wife.
Yeah.
Because I am the more adventurous one.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those have been priceless. Her facial expressions, I mean, I wish I had video, because I'd be like, hey, so I found out about this idea. What do you think? And she'd be like, oh, okay, all right. Yeah, let me think about that. And her eyes would be real wide, very expressive. An hour later, yeah, I don't think that's possible. So maybe no.
Just not a big fan of hot sauce.
Yeah. Hot sauce, eggs, and cheese is meant for a sandwich, not for sex. Well, I have one final question for you, Dave, and thank you. You have been incredibly gracious with your time and with your information. We really appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, it's been a ball. I've had fun.
But there's one question, and how you answer this.
Uh-oh.
Is going to determine what we do in post edit.
Right. And whether I'm invited back.
Exactly. So, out of curiosity, have you ever downloaded our Reignite Your Marriage smartphone app on any device you have?
Just say yes. Just say yes.
You know, that last question broke up a little bit.
You could be doing it right now as we're talking.
Yeah. I'm about to do it. Here's what you need to know about my phone and my apps and all this stuff.
You have a Windows phone, don't you?
Looking through my phone, I don't have any apps that I've downloaded. Like, every app that I see on this phone is something that my kids have downloaded.
That's sad.
Like, this is essentially just like a gaming device that I carry around for them and occasionally get calls or text messages. Like, it's really sad, but I mean, I wish I could show you screenshots. It is game after game after game. Like, I don't even get my own phone, but I'm going to download it. I'm going to have my own app on here, and it's going to be from you guys.
Yeah, it'll be the one Dave Willis app is going to be the Reignite Your Marriage app. But thank you so much for coming on. And folks, I want to remind you that the app is out there. It's really, really helpful on this very podcast episode. We have direct links to iTunes, Google Play, Windows Phone, Amazon App Store. And then while you're online, you might as well browse over to SmalleyInstitute.com because, well, we have a free course waiting for you. It's the number one reason relationships fail. Totally free. You don't have to give any credit card information. And it will give you exactly what is broken in your relationship. Well, Smalley Marriage Radio is brought to you by the Smalley Institute. If your marriage is on life support, reignite your relationship in only 2 days. Find out more online at SmalleyInstitute.com or call us toll-free at 888-565-6462.